Welcome to the latest episode of Connect Ed Tech,
a podcast where the E and D may or may not stand for Elizabeth
and Daryl.
Welcome, Connect Ed Techers. I'm Daryl, and this is our second podcast.
And I'm Elizabeth. Thanks for watching or listening, whatever you're doing.
Yeah, we got a fun-filled podcast today.
We do. We actually have our first guest.
Our first guest.
First one.
Do we have to beg? I don't know.
We had to bribe him.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, we had to bribe him a little bit. We're sending some merch.
Merch. Oh, we have lovely merch. We have new colored shirts this time.
For spring.
Blue. It's our favorite color.
It is. Blue. It's my favorite color.
Yeah. So, but who do we have today?
Steve Dembo. From Teach 42.
Teach 42.
He's like a big ed tech guru. Does a lot of speaking at some conferences here and there. He's just really, really good. Met him at TCA a couple years ago, talking about digital storytelling, and I really liked him. And he's been to our school district a couple times, and he's just a really neat guy. Fun times. Talking about virtual reality.
All right. Yeah, that's a hot topic right now in ed tech and education.
Yeah.
He's going to give us some good feedback and tips and tricks to incorporate VR in our classrooms.
Absolutely. So we'll be talking to him a little later in the show. But for now, I got to know.
Yes.
What did you do for spring break?
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
That's a song?
It's a song.
No, it is now.
It is now.
I've never heard that
one. Or what is it good for?
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. I got it.
Now you got it. All right. He's with me.
I went to Dallas to see my parents this past weekend. And then, here's the exciting thing about my spring break. Mm-hmm. When I came home Monday, it was in the afternoon, I saw shingles in front of my doorstep.
Shingles? Like on your skin?
Not that type of shingles. Oh, okay. That's horrible. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want that. But shingles, like roof shingles.
Roof
shingles. And I was like, maybe there was a storm or something.
On the ground?
On the ground, in front of my doorstep. I was like, what is that? I just picked it up and threw it away, but my wife was like, no, you better check what's up there. So I said, okay. So I got a ladder, went up there, there's a hole in my roof. So I lifted the shingle and there was a hole there, and I noticed there was fur around the shingle. And I was like, I think we have an invader not paying rent.
Yes.
So my wife was like, well, we should survey the damage from the inside, but I don't want to go up there.
No.
So I said, okay, we'll do that. So we went up together, my brave wife and I, surveying the damage. And just like, snow tracks, the insulation was pushed to the side.
Okay.
And we spotted some raccoon poop.
How did you know that's, it was raccoon?
I just assume it's raccoon. I mean, that big of a hole couldn't be a squirrel. I don't know. Maybe it's a bobcat. I don't know. But then we called somebody in, and they came out and put a trap up there 2 days ago. And they told me to check it every morning to make sure the raccoon's caught. I hear it up there in my attic.
So we assume it has not been caught.
We assume, it's not. It hasn't
been
caught.
It's just wreaking
havoc.
I'm
hoping when I get home, but they are nocturnal creatures. They're sleeping during the daytime.
Okay.
Maybe it's in that cage. And what I love about this company, though, because I'm for the animals, right? I don't want to kill them or anything. It's a catch and release. So they catch it, and they release it in the forest, and then the raccoon can go hunt, can go invade someone else's house.
Okay. Does the raccoon, does it wake you up at nighttime?
It doesn't, but it makes my dogs bark, which then, yes, it does wake me up, because my dogs bark.
I had a noisy neighbor above me that used to wake me up, and so I had to get the broom.
You have neighbors in your attic?
I live in an apartment.
Okay.
So neighbors, noisy neighbors above me. So I get the broom, 2 a.m., bang, 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 on the ceiling.
My gosh.
Yeah, that's
fine. I'm sure they appreciate it.
Yeah, and maybe that'll shut your raccoon.
I'll try that.
Try that.
With the broom.
Yeah, I didn't go on vacation anywhere either.
Okay.
Kind of stayed home, just chilled out a little bit. So I mean, like, who of this Connect Ed Tech group crew even went anywhere for spring break? Did Eric say he went to Galveston or something?
I think so. Eric went to Galveston.
Yeah, so it's like nobody on our crew except for
Lily the Llama.
Lily the Llama. Vacation to Universal Studios she went. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we're in some pictures of her.
Yeah, some pictures of her. Yeah. She sent it to us.
She did.
Just to tease us.
She did. Yeah, yep. Didn't even bring us a t-shirt.
Nothing at all. But
nothing
here she is, here in all her glory, staring at the camera.
I know, right? Well, you know, we couldn't actually go anywhere for this trip, but VR.
We could. Should we go somewhere right now?
We could go somewhere with VR. That's the beauty of VR, right?
That's what I'm going to do now.
So I'm not going to put these on because it'll mess up my hair.
Okay.
And that's important to me. So,
ooh.
And I would also look like Daryl right now, which is like really ridiculous. So Daryl, where are you right now? Where are you? Where are you going on vacation?
I'm actually in space right now.
In space,
I can reach for the stars. It's up there somewhere.
Click.
Okay. This is actually making me very dizzy.
Watch it. Making you dizzy, huh?
It is, but it's amazing.
It's in space.
It's like,
okay.
I'm actually there. But you can't really breathe in space, but I'm
What's your favorite right VR experience?
VR experience? Oh man, there's so many. I'm gonna take these off.
Okay.
Ooh, I was getting dizzy. But for me, we try to use it in our classrooms, but for fun, I got this a couple years back, and I love going on roller coasters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The roller coasters
are fun. It's like
fun.
You're there, experiencing a roller coaster.
True immersive experience.
Right.
I agree with that for sure. I got a VR headset, I guess about 4 years ago, the Google Cardboard, because they're kind of cheap.
Okay.
And you can just stick your phone right in there,
right.
The device. And the roller coaster was one of my favorite. They also have like haunted houses,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of scary.
Yeah, I've got a few of those there. I'm too chicken to try them, though.
Yeah. You're scared to try the haunted house?
I couldn't even go up in my attic alone.
Oh,
my wife had to come in with me.
Wow.
But, yeah, I'm a chicken.
How long has VR been around, anyway?
Oh,
I mean,
man.
It seems new to education, but truly it's not.
It's been around for a while. I know the video games, the Oculus Rift, I think they're the one, the pioneers with mm-hmm. virtual reality, and PlayStation has their own VR.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's branching towards education.
Seen a lot in video games and movies and things like that too. So I feel like VR isn't as new as we sometimes think as mm-hmm. educators.
Right.
It's just kind of new in education a little bit, trying to find our way.
Right.
I feel like Steve Dimbo is going to shed some light on the VR thing because I think we're both newbies.
Oh yeah. I love virtual reality. I play it at home, but I want to see how we can use it in education.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've played with it a little bit, but clearly we are not the experts. So in just a few minutes after we take a short break, we'll be back with Steve Dimbo, and he's the professional,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to shed some light on this whole VR experience.
You can find all things related to the Connect Ed Tech podcast by visiting our website, flippinggoodtech.com. And while you're there, make sure to click on all the tabs for a closer look at who we are and why we're passionate about everything we do.
And most importantly, be sure to follow us at Flippin' Good Tech on all social media platforms and subscribe to our YouTube channel for quick access to all the latest podcast episodes, Connect Ed Tech promos, and Flipped in 5 Tech Tips.
Okay, we're back. For this segment, we're going to be interviewing Steve Dimbo. He's going to be talking to us on virtual reality. We've got him all the way from, where are you from, Steve?
Chicago. Well, just outside Chicago.
Chicago. I love the windy city of Chicago. It is the windy city, right?
It is the windy city.
That's why you got a hat on today.
That is, no.
But yeah. When it's windy, I wear a hat.
It's bad
just
hair
to keep
day
my
Saturday.
Hair in there, yeah.
Bad hair day Saturday. We'll go with it. Okay. Well, first of all, just thank you for being here with us.
Our first guest.
Time. He's our first guest. First guest in the history of Connect Ed Tech.
So I'm excited to be your inaugural guest.
Woo!
Hopefully not the last one.
Don't feel pressure, but you can make it or break it.
Oh, great.
Oh, man. That's a lot of pressure.
No pressure.
Pretty confident in the latter, but.
No, not at all. Okay, well, let's just start out with you telling us a little bit about yourself and your background and why education and why ed tech.
So I've always been in education. Started off in college, I started off as a music education major, then wound up switching to early childhood. Taught kindergarten for a few years before becoming a director of technology, and then spent 10 years in the private sector working with Discovery Education. Since then, do a lot of presenting, some consulting. I serve on my local school board and teach at the college level at Wilkes University. So I try and stay active, and I've been involved in education from early childhood all the way up into post-secondary. And I just think it's an exciting space to be in, not only because of the impact that it has on our students and obviously on the world, but it's an interesting time to be in education where things are always sort of in this state of flux and evolving more rapidly than ever before.
Right, I totally agree with that. In fact, we met you, you're talking about speaking at different places, we met you at TCA a couple of years ago, and you were talking about storytelling for the YouTube generation. And that was a really cool session. And I was so excited that you got to come visit us at our district last year and going to do it again this year. So we're really excited you're here. But today we're talking about what, Daryl? Daryl's, this is one of his favorite topics.
What are we talking about? I think virtual reality and augmented reality.
Yeah. We have some questions.
We do. We do. It's one of those hot items right now in education, and it's growing. A lot of potential, it seems like it. So we want to get your expertise on it.
I'm happy to wax poetic on that. I think it's funny because I've been talking about virtual reality for about 5 years now. And 5 years ago, honestly, the main message was there's really interesting things happening, but this is not the time yet for educators to start dipping their toes yet. Be patient. And over the last several years, you know, we've kind of started to see that shift. And at this point, I'm still not at the point where I can advocate that every school district needs to be investing in a VR lab or anything like that. But we're really close to that point. Everything is sort of starting to come together where the right hardware, the right content, and society is starting to kind of come around to understanding how it kind of fits into the nature of human discourse. So it's an interesting space, like we were just kind of mentioning, where things are constantly evolving. And this is one where, you know, if you like being on the cutting edge, this is the place to be right now.
Right, and it's kind of a weird thing to balance, because I know VR is good for student engagement. So the questions we get from campuses are, oh, my kids are really interested in it. They like taking these virtual tours and seeing history basically come alive. But beyond that, they're not really sure what to do with it. So what's the next?
I think if you really want to understand the power of VR in education right now, you have to consider the nature of learning. When a student is going to try and learn something, let's say, something about chemistry, they could just read about it in the textbook and know exactly what's going to happen, you know, how it occurs and get all the data and so on. That's fine. But if you want something that's a little bit more immersive, a little bit more meaningful to them, maybe they could watch a video. And if they watch a video, then they're actually going to see it happening and it's going to resonate a little bit more. You know, you were talking about digital storytelling. That's one of the great things about media is it really sticks in the brain. But those both pale in comparison to actually doing it with your own hands and getting that concrete first-hand experience. Now, if you keep that in mind, then you're starting to get at why VR is so significant. With virtual reality, you know, I could tell people all about the pyramids. That's great. I can even load up Google Expeditions, which is sort of a low-tech sort of VR, and put somebody right in front of the pyramid and let them look in every single direction, and that's pretty cool. What I can't do is let somebody actually walk around the pyramids, walk up to it, reach out, open a door, lift open a sarcophagus, see what's inside of it, and so on and so forth. That's where VR shines. It's giving kids, not quite authentic, it's still digital, but it feels authentic. And even though you might think that it isn't, because obviously they're creating worlds in a digital space and so on, here's the reality. When I play a roller coaster simulation for you in virtual reality, most people tend to need to grab something or sit down. It feels real to them. Right. When I load up an Everest simulation and they actually have to use their arms to do the rock climbing and this kind of thing, people actually physically get out of breath. When they actually do virtual surgeries using the tools that are actually cutting up a person and removing a bullet from a wound, people who have an aversion to, you know, blood or a little more squeamish, they have the same physical reactions, the same innate gut reactions that they do when encountering in the real space. So that's where it fits in. It's a matter of giving kids, you know, authentic firsthand experiences that we couldn't otherwise do in any other way.
Wow. And it's really going outside of the four walls of the classroom instantaneously and engaging students in a way that it's very new, very awesome.
It is. The other analogy I always like to use is, you know, I can load up a VR simulation that takes you up to the International Space Station, and I can put you in the middle of the module, let you see every single thing around it, and so on, and feel like you're kind of there. But then I can also load up another simulation where it allows you to do a spacewalk with that sense of weightlessness and so on, and you get the same disorientation as your feet go over your head and so on, where you literally feel like you're the astronaut. And that has an impact. And when you compare those two experiences together, you get something that's really immersive and really memorable and really significant for students that, you know, it lasts. And that's kind of what we want. So
it's a lot of brain science behind that. I'm like listening to you talk about how it almost tricks your brain and your body into thinking, it really does, right? It tricks your brain and your body into thinking it's really experiencing those things.
And we've seen the YouTube videos of their kids getting their grandparents to do it, and it's like, it's very eye-opening, very exciting to watch.
There's something called the Planck experience, where all it is you step into an elevator, you push the top button, and it takes you the elevator virtually up to like the 100th floor or something like that. The elevator doors open, and there's a piece of wood in front of you. And all you have to do is take like five steps forward. And I've done it for probably about 20 people, and I would say maybe 4 or 5 people were able to successfully walk out onto that plank.
Oh my goodness.
Most people, literally, I've seen at least 3 or 4 people just the second they saw the plank, they just take off the headset and say, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Now,
right.
It's not that it's so cool to be able to trick people, but at the same time, we go back to that sort of medical thing. To somebody who has an aversion to needles, mm-hmm. is afraid mm-hmm. of getting shots, we can kind of start couching them through that experience virtually, slowly, let them see the whole thing where they're not actually going to feel it, but at the same time,
the therapy,
it's going to start
yeah.
reducing the anxiety. And so
right.
If you think about the frog dissection or pig dissection, there are some students who absolutely refuse to do it. This gives them an opportunity to still do it and have a legitimate experience. You know, and when the kids screw up, you're not throwing a couple $100 out
That's
on every
true. So it's sort of cost effective that way, because I know as a 7th grade science teacher, buying those frogs were expensive every single year. We spent like $1,000 on frogs, but...
And, you know, especially when you amp it up and you start going to cadavers. Cadavers are not cheap.
Right, no.
cadavers
where do you get your cadavers from? But so you were giving these examples in the pyramid and surgeries. Other classrooms now that are using this type of technology, do you see it often in schools?
Yeah, you just said two different things. Are there schools? Yes, there are some schools that are doing it. Is it often? No. And part of that is the barriers to entry, the hardware and so on. You know, in order to do the full VR experience, you need the headset, goggles, sensors, and those cost, I mean, there's a range, but anywhere from around $400 to $800, depending on the headset. And then you need a very high-powered computer to run it. Computer that costs around $1,000 to $2,000. So the all-in cost is at least $1,500 to $2,000. That's pricey.
I hope I didn't lose anybody there when you mentioned those prices. But.
Yeah, I mean, and you also need space. You need to be able to set up the sensors so the students can kind of move around in the space. So that's a little bit more prohibitive for schools, especially if they're not sure whether they're going to commit to it or not. However, last year, Oculus came out with something called the Oculus Go, mm-hmm. which was an all-in headset with a hand sensor for $200 that will run about maybe 60, 70% of the Oculus library. Is it as good as the full one? Not quite, but it's legit. It's absolutely a solid, real VR experience. Google Cardboard, I'm a big fan of, and Google Expeditions and all that. But really, you're talking about taking a cell phone and tricking it into thinking that it's a VR device. It's not a great VR device. It's an adequate one when that's the only thing you have available. The Oculus Go is actually cheaper, because $200 is cheaper than most of the cell phones you're putting into the Cardboard.
Right.
And it's a legit device. At $200, a lot of schools are buying small pods of that. They're buying 5 headsets mm-hmm. or 6 headsets so students can kind of, you know, have a real experience and not be rushed to only to be in VR for like 5 minutes, to be able to let them be in VR for 35, 40 minutes and so on. And then right in between those two levels, there's a new headset that's supposed to be coming out hopefully relatively soon, in a month or two, from Oculus, called the Oculus Quest, that is going to be much more powerful than the Go, but but still self-contained, not requiring a computer, not requiring a phone or anything, and that should clock in around 400. And once again, I think 400 is a great price point for schools. So while there are some that are giving it a try and starting to to actually use it in practical ways, we're right on sort of the forefront of that wave. The analogy that I like to use is we're right around the point of the iPad 1. You know what I mean? Okay. Where people are getting it and they're seeing it, they're saying, oh, this would be great for students, but the apps aren't quite there yet. The hardware isn't quite there yet.
Right.
But we can see there from here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. What about, you talked about needing space to roam. So when I watch these kids use these VR headsets, they're like, they look ridiculous, first of all, right? Because we don't see what they see, but I see them walking around with these big VR headsets. And some of them actually trip and fall. And then I had heard someone ask, well, could these virtual reality simulators trigger a seizure in a kid or some type of negative drawback with them? What do you think about that, or what have you heard?
Listen, I won't say it's not possible. I think it's definitely possible. I mean, people have seizures and reactions just from blinking lights in movie theaters and such, or strobe lights at a wedding party. You know what I mean? So yes, obviously that's possible. But more often than not, when people are falling, I mean, you mentioned the cord piece, and right now most headsets are tethered because of the amount of data that's going back and forth. But the latest Vive system does have a wireless module, so you can get rid of the cord. Or some people have gotten even more creative. When you go to standalone VR experiences at like Disney or maybe even your local mall or something like that, they actually literally strap a laptop to your back, so you're not tethered around. But beyond that, that part about the brain. It's because sometimes it's giving you a virtual experience and tricking your body that it should be experiencing or feeling something when physically that's not what's happening. Mm-hmm. I went to a standalone VR experience where it was like a laser tag kind of thing. You had 8 kids in headsets with goggles on running around in a space, not running into each other because the software was smart enough to avoid the collision. Uh-huh. But the virtual space that they were in had multiple levels, second floor, third floor, and the way you got from one floor to the next was a ramp. Now, as you walked physically from here to here, physically, you're just walking in a straight line. Mm-hmm. Your brain thinks that it's a ramp and is trying
no
to
kidding.
Step. You know what I mean? So because of that, I did watch some kids kind of fall over as they tried to like go down the ramp and walk in.
That would be me. Here, on the ground.
Where can I do this? I want to do this right now.
It is.
This is so fun.
An absolute trip, and
literally.
Literally.
Why don't ya?
And that's a real challenge. Is how do you like with the spacewalk? How do you allow people to feel like they're upside down mentally when physically they're not actually upside down? I mean, that stuff the software is going to have to try and keep evolving to figure out.
So cool.
Yeah.
See, I went to Six Flags a couple of years ago, and now they have roller coasters where you have VR. Like, the experience on a roller coaster without the VR is crazy enough, but then attaching the virtual reality to it.
Yeah. And so what they'll do is they'll map the physical roller coaster to a digital roller coaster. And the beautiful thing about it is then you're having the exact same physical experience as you're having in the digital one. It's just with all the added bells and whistles.
And maybe a heart attack or two. I don't know.
Exactly.
But we're talking about, so there are ways that students can be engaged in these experiences. And, as educators, we're trying to find ways to get our students the creators of experiences. Is there anything out there where students or teachers can create virtual reality experiences?
Yeah, so there are a few. The majority of them right now, if you start searching out creation in VR, the majority of them are revolving around one of two things. One is 360-degree virtual field trips, where someone will create a 360 photo or video, and then another one, and sort of chain them together, where if you aim with the goggles, it'll kind of transport transport you to the next location. It's very easy to create or take 360-degree photos. You can even do it with a regular phone with, you don't need special equipment or anything. So to be able to create a 360 photo, another one, another one, another one, and then chain them together, that's one way to do it. It's not the most immersive thing, and it's not like, no one's going to get out of breath from one of those. But that's one way to at least dip your toes in. And yes, technically it's still VR. Another one is things like CoSpaces, where they can create augmented reality or even VR sorts of experiences by putting 3D models in places strategically. Then people can put on the goggles and experience and look at the models from every direction. But once again, it's not really the most immersive experience. To really do those high-end immersive experiences, it requires some pretty sophisticated software thing. You know, Unity is making a big, big, big push in this space. And Unity does have, you know, it's a professional game platform. It's what the, you know, the pros, Electronic Arts and so on, are using. They do have a package, a playground package, that even middle schoolers can use to create games. And then they can also take their games and the things that they've created, whether it's, you know, digital stories and so on, they can actually convert them into 3D versions, and then you can experience those with VR. It's about as close as we're getting at the elementary and middle school level. In high school, some of them are starting to do more, you know, extensive stuff. Most of the really true 3D creation that's going on is using some of the art tools where they're actually painting in 3D and adding texture and adding animations and creating sculptures that can only exist in a 3D space. Other than that, it's about where we're at right now. But keep in mind, when the iPad 1 came around, there were barely any apps for it. Everybody knew what we wanted to see, and it was just a content-only device and not a creation device. And it took years. It took years to create the right tools just to give the students the experience that we wanted. We're very, very early on in that process. Right now, I would not recommend that anybody buy VR or invest in VR thinking that your students are going to become great VR creators. The tools just aren't there right now. So right now, experience it, see what it is, check out to see whether what content is there actually aligns to current curriculum, and then make use of that. But for, in terms of actually getting the students to be creators, I'd be patient.
Okay, that's good advice. Yeah. What are your favorite go-tos? Like, we're talking about teachers, and they don't make a whole lot of money. They need to make a lot more money, right? So maybe a teacher wants to start out with something small in their classroom. Elementary students don't really have their own devices really that they can bring, but do you have some recommendations for teachers?
Like technology in general?
Yeah, tech or with reference to virtual reality.
With VR, hands down, there's only one on that list for me, and that's Oculus Go. I would take that $200 headset over Google Cardboard any day of the week. I think it's just a much, much better VR experience. I think the content that's available for it is very robust and solid. Right now, that's the only thing on the list. Once the Quest comes along, that one might fit into that space. And there's a few other companies that have standalone headsets, but they're all a little bit more expensive, and they're not quite, I don't think they're quite a good fit for the education space just yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, listen, if you don't want to spend any money at all, use Google Cardboard. You know, get the Cardboard, put a phone in there, and there's a bunch of different experiences. I mean, Google Expedition, you know, at the end of the day, with virtual reality, content is king. If you don't have the right content, it's useless. And Google Expedition is one of the largest content libraries available. It is phenomenal. It's been well thought out. It's very well developed. It's been going on for years. They understand education. Nothing wrong with it whatsoever. And for absolutely free, using your own cell phone, assuming that you've got one, great. Use that. If you're going to actually take money out of your wallet and buy something, Oculus Go.
Okay.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and YouTube also, a lot of the videos on YouTube now, I know you can watch them and experiencing them in VR. Is that every video? Even videos like if we uploaded this video of you right now to YouTube, could we make a VR experience out of it?
You could. What the VR experience will be is you'll be watching that video in like a movie theater or on a screen on the moon or something like that, but it'll still be two-dimensional. Now, I'll be honest, I love watching even two-dimensional movies with a VR headset. I look like the biggest geek and idiot in the world. But on an airplane?
On an airplane, yeah. I've seen people do it.
And you know why? Because normally I'm watching it on like my phone on a screen like this. In VR, I'm watching it on this massive screen. And if I put my head like this and I tilt my head up, the screen is over there. If I'm uncomfortable and I want to tilt my head
there
like this,
go.
The screen is over there. It's kind of nice.
Cool.
But yes, you look like an idiot.
Well, who cares what people think?
Right.
That's on the daily.
Yeah, that's on the daily.
On a daily.
Well, we awesome. Could have been doing this conference with our VR headsets.
We could have been. Totally doing it. But
if you want to do like a true sort of VR experience, which some people are doing, you really need a 360-degree camera. And those cameras, you know, the Ryko cameras, you know, you can get them for a buck, $100 or $200 or so. And you can record high-definition video in 360. Which is kind of awesome. And then you can even do live streaming on you know, YouTube and Facebook and so on through it. And then if we were doing that, people could actually watch that video and see everything else in the room. They could see the crew. They could see all the people
making
it happen. They could see what the rest of my basement looks like, which is why I have a backdrop.
We love your backdrop, by the way.
Thank you. I highly recommend it. It's a shower curtain from China. You know.
That's awesome. I have a couple more questions for you before we close out. One question is, do you see VR being used outside of education? And I know the answer is yes. So if we're talking about developing students, preparing them post-secondary, why should VR be a part of their education? Because what is waiting for them when they walk across that stage?
That's a great question.
Okay. Yeah, and that hits on a bunch of different like little elements here. I mean, one of them is because depending on what they wind up going into, VR is going to be a primary way that they gain job skills, get job experience, get reviews, and so on. I mean, it's not even just for high tech jobs. We're talking about concrete things. We're talking about people who work on cars, where what it's doing is it's actually scanning the car and providing them real time information, saying this one's running hot and this piece is broken. You should look at this belt. It looks like there's too much wear. And VR is giving them all that feedback in real time. Or for welding, I mean, there's a welding training simulator using virtual reality where you put on a regular welding helmet, use the regular tools, but they're virtual versions. There's no heat or anything, but on the screen, it makes it look like it's really happening. And so a teacher can be standing right next to them and saying, you're going too fast, you're doing this, let's rewind it, try this again, let's switch it from aluminum to steel and throw in some. For doctors, the same thing. I mean, when we were giving that example about taking a bullet out, you know, they are creating custom tools to use. So they're using real, true surgical tools, but then the actual surgery that they're doing is on a, you know, a virtual body, if you will. Mm-hmm. So it's giving them very, very high quality simulations, but not only so that they can practice doing like laparoscopic surgery and such, but they can also, the people who are running it can also throw in variables. Like what if the person goes into cardiac arrest while you're doing it, mm-hmm. and being able to have these people kind of sort of react in real time. And it's giving them that, you know, the drama along with what happens in a lot of these. So point is, A, they're going to be experiencing this. So getting them comfortable in that sort of environment is a good thing. But B, the VR revolution hasn't necessarily happened in every field. People don't know how VR is going to impact, let's say, whatever, lawyers, or how it's going to impact politicians, or how it's going to impact, you know, dance, or how it's going to impact whatever else, you know, all these different fields. So for the students, you'll step back and say, people are doing it this way right now, and I think we could do it better by using what I've learned about virtual reality to create this sort of an experience. I'll give you a very concrete and simple example. Walmart uses virtual reality to prepare its tellers for Black Friday.
What?
To show them what it's going to be like when you've got 2,000 people in this store and they are all angry at you and so on. How do you maintain your cool? How do you handle that? What's it going to be like? The kids who are right now going to our schools are going to be the ones who are looking at every area of our society and saying, could this right now, the way we do it is fine, but could we be doing it better using virtual reality?
And love that. The practical use, not just the engagement and the fun.
I'm so excited about the future.
That's exactly. And even if they don't know how to create it themselves right now, maybe they're the ones that are going to be hiring the developers and giving them the vision to create.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need the visionaries too. I agree. So we're coming to the end of this, and you gave us so much good information. Thank you.
I want to go buy an Oculus Go. You can buy those right now? They're out?
Best Buy.
If I go to Best Buy, I can get one?
Yeah.
Right now. He's going right now.
See you later.
Okay, and last thing. Who do you follow on Twitter? Who should we follow? Who do you follow?
Oh, my gosh. Well, for AR and VR, you know, there's a great Facebook group run by Michael Fricano that's absolutely well worth joining. And I, actually, as long as we're talking about Facebook, I would also join the Merge Educators group. Well, Merge, I think, is better fit for augmented reality, which we didn't necessarily talk about as much. There's a lot of teachers who are doing some really interesting curricular type things with that right now. And then Jamie Donnelly. She is absolutely phenomenal. She's got a great, she's in the middle of a series of blogs right now where she's doing 30 VR lessons and ideas in 30 days. And she's brilliant. I absolutely have loved working with her on a couple of augmented virtual reality playgrounds recently.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any last questions for him?
No, that's it. I'm excited. I'm going to go to Best Buy right now.
All right. Daryl's gone to Best Buy. He's out. Well, thank you so much, Steve. This was great.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. And I look forward to hanging out with your teachers over the summer soon.
If people wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Teach42 just about anywhere, Twitter, Facebook, teach42@gmail.com, or just call me at 42-42-42-42-me.
I think that was too many 42s.
I'm going to try that out.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, thanks again. We appreciate you, and we'll be seeing you soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And if you want to check us out on Twitter, how would they do that, Daryl?
Hey, follow us at Flippin' Good Tech. You can even go to our website, flippinggoodtech.com. We've got our podcasts there, our videos, podcasts, Apple, and all that good stuff. And we also have a blog on there.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Daryl has a blog, I have a blog, everybody's got a blog. I'm sure Steve's got a blog. Yeah, and we do have a YouTube channel too, so subscribe to our YouTube channel, Flippin' Good Tech, and that's pretty much it.
Yep.
That's it, right?
Thank you, we did it. Bam!
S1E2.
There you go.
Peace out.